We talk a lot about Advent as a season of preparation, the time in which we wait and watch for God to do something big, something earth-shattering, in a way that really only God can. Because somehow when it's God who does something cataclysmic, it ends up being the only thing that can really put a broken world back together. On this first Sunday in Advent, we start our preparations in the Gospel of Mark, a curious choice considering Mark is so desperate to get out his message of hope that he just skips over the entire Jesus being born thing. And so as we read this morning, we go to the end, or towards the end, of Mark's Gospel. It's Jesus' last teaching to his disciples before his passion begins. We read from Mark chapter 13, beginning in verse 24. But in those days, after that suffering, the sun will be darkened and the moon will not give its light, and the stars will be falling from heaven, and the powers in the heavens will be shaken. Then they will see the Son of Man coming in the clouds with great power and glory. Then he will send out the angels and gather his elect from the four winds, from the ends of the earth to the ends of heaven. From the fig tree, learn its lesson. As soon as its branches become tender and put forth its leaves, you know that summer is near. So also, when you see these things taking place, you know that he is near, at the very gates. Truly, I tell you, this generation will not pass away until all these things have taken place. Heaven and earth will pass away, but my words will not pass away. But about that day or hour, no one knows, neither the angels in heaven nor the Son, but only the Father. Beware, keep alert, for you do not know when the time will come. It's like a man going on a journey when he leaves home and puts his slaves in charge, each with his work, and commands the doorkeeper to be on the watch. Therefore, keep awake. Keep awake, for you do not know when the master of the house will come, in the evening, or at midnight, or at cockcrow, or at dawn, or else he may find you asleep when he comes suddenly. And what I say to you, I say to all, keep awake. The word of God for the people of God. Thanks be to God. Lola lived in the mobile home park right at the edge of town. As I walked up the steps to her front door, I noticed, you know, one of those signs that people sometimes have at their front doors. They're the ones with wood burning, etched with the names Lola plus George. Now, I never met George. It was after his death that loneliness really started to get to Lola. It was that loneliness that eventually nudged open the door of First Christian Church for her. Lola became a fixture on Sunday mornings. Now, she never did join the church officially. She reserved that for the church that she had attended for many, many years in Kansas. But it would be hard to argue that Lola didn't belong. When she got the cancer diagnosis and had to give up her home and her dog, a miniature dachshund, Sam, to take up residence in a nursing center in Springfield, the big city nearby, it then was my turn to visit her every week. Her kids lived hours away, and although she'd made connections in the church, when you live in Republic, Missouri, you don't often go to the big city that's 8 miles away unless you really have to. I liked going to the city, and I loved Lola. So every Friday, I'd make the 16-mile round trip to sit for an hour with her. She'd show me pictures of her grandkids, tell me stories about her kids, what was going on in their lives. On good days, she'd be up in her wheelchair. On the not so good days, she would stay in bed. One particular afternoon early on, I asked Lola if there was anything that she needed, anything that I could bring to her. Lord knows you might get what you need in a care center, but you don't always get what you want. And everyone should have a little bit of that too. Lola wanted a chocolate milkshake. All right, that I could do. Figuring that anything that wasn't insure would fit the bill, I started with the place that was closest, McDonald's. We branched out from there. It almost turned into a taste test, really. Hardee's, I think it's called Carl's Jr. here. Wendy's, if we were feeling really fancy, Steak and Shake. Every Friday, we'd sip our milkshakes and shoot the breeze. I felt a little bit at a loss, though. As much as I enjoyed our time together, and certainly those milkshakes, I wanted to be sure that we were having the kinds of conversations that pastors should have with their congregants. I just didn't know exactly what those kinds of conversations were. In seminary, your professors paint the pastoral as the deep and rich theological debates that you'll have in Bible studies and in small groups, which is well and good and stimulating even, except when the job is lost, or the depression is getting worse, or both your parents and your kids have your number, or the test that was supposed to be negative comes back positive, or the test that was supposed to be positive comes back negative, or the budget just can't be stretched any further without you breaking. When life just doesn't turn out the way we hoped it would, what really matters? What really matters? Well, the people who lived in Mark's world were asking themselves this very same question. Mark's gospel is written in a realm that has been shattered and shaken to its very core. The Roman armies conquered the rebellion. They destroyed the Jewish temple, desecrating for Jews what was nothing less than the sacred heart. Not just of their worship, but really of their lives. In the midst of that catastrophe, Mark's gospel offers a desperately needed message of hope. Desolation, chaos, wilderness. If those are any places that you've lived lately, the Jesus of Mark's gospel has a good word for you. In Jesus' last lecture, so to speak, the last teaching that he offers to his disciples before the empire wields its final death-dealing blow, Jesus uses this ancient literary technique, or perhaps Mark does, in crafting Jesus' words. It's the genre of apocalypse. It does not involve zombies in this case. And maybe that semester of Greek in seminary did come in a tiny bit handy, because we know that the word apocalypse comes from the Greek word apokalypsis, which means uncovering or revealing. In this teaching, Jesus describes God pulling back the veil, revealing to God's people some sort of hidden and dramatic rescue that's to come. Just when it seems like it can't get any worse, God does some of God's best work. God offers an extravagant and evocative vision of hope when all seems lost. And so when Jesus tells his disciples to keep awake, he's telling them not to give up. When Jesus tells his disciples to keep awake, he's telling them, keep paying attention. When Jesus tells his disciples to keep awake, he's telling them not to get so discouraged that they fail to see how even the most vulnerable among them are being treated by powers and principalities. When Jesus tells his disciples to keep awake, he He's telling them to not get so overwhelmed that they neglect to listen to the stories that need to be heard, especially when they're from voices that have been too quickly silenced. When Jesus tells his disciples to keep awake, he's telling them to hold on to hope. Now, I took a few chocolate milkshakes worth of visits with Lola before we settled into another important part of our routine. Each visit, before I left, I'd ask Lola, "What's giving you hope this week?" When Jesus says to us, to all of us, Mark's gospel says, when Jesus says to us all, "Keep awake," what I think he's saying is, notice the hope God is giving you. Hope in all its forms is worth naming where it's found.